November 23, 1993, I'm Ken Lamb of the Milton Historical Society. I'm interviewing Ken Marshall as part of a series of interviews for the Milton Historical Society's archives commemorating the 50th anniversary of the end of the Second World War in 1995. Ken, tell us how you came to enlist and where you did it and when, would you?
Well, I was going to Ontario Agricultural College and in the Canadian Officers Training Corps, and they had us out one day running across a plowed field with 6 inches of wet snow on the top, and I decided that there must be a better way of doing things than this, so I went down to Hamilton to see if I could get in the Air Force. And I went in the Air Force on January the 6th, when the other guys went back for their next term, from there to the Manning Pool in Toronto for foot drill, square bashing, I guess they call it. From there to Picton for 2 or 3 weeks, and then out on what they called guard duty at, can't remember the name of the place now, up near London. Mm-hmm. One of the kind of funny things that happened there, I was walking around doing what I thought I was supposed to do, and I came to a telephone pole with a button on it. I wondered what it was about, so I pushed the button. And it wasn't very long before the station commander and a couple of other guys came along in a car wanting to know where the fire was.
Right.
So, I guess we did about a month there, and then we were sent to Victoriaville in Quebec for an initial training school. That was where we were taught, something of Air Force law and a bit of navigation and things like that, more square bashing. That was kind of interesting with all the French people there. There's hardly anyone who could speak English.
Right.
We were quite welcome until one of the girls was in a condition she shouldn't have been in. And the priest sort of told everybody to keep away from us, but by that time we'd put in our month and were sent to Mount Hope. It was quite a long train ride, and I fell asleep and we're almost to Hamilton and some rotten sod blew smoke up my nose. Have you ever had that happen?
No.
Oh, God, that nearly killed me. Jeez. I didn't smoke at the time either. Gosh, that hurt. So at Mount Hope, we were trained to fly on the Fleet Finch Mark II, a biplane, open cockpits. And I got to Divil on my first solo for landing slightly crosswind. And remember that has always stuck in my mind. And after so many hours, we were sent to Dunville for what they call service flying training on Harvards. They had flaps and a retractable undercarriage and a variable pitch air screw. Much the same as the more advanced planes we'd be flying in Britain had, except they didn't have the power or the speed. And after so many hours there, well, I got my wings in August the 20th, 1941.
August 20th, yeah.
And 2 weeks leave and overseas.
Well, so you started out to be a fighter pilot, and within 5 or 6 months, you actually were a fighter pilot.
8 months, yeah. And I was the, as far as I know, I was the first person from Milton to get pilot's wings.
Oh. Well, could you tell us a little bit about your trip overseas, Ken?
Sure. We got on a ship called the Harpesa with 7,000 tons of flour and a convoy of 41 ships. We were the last ship on the starboard column. There were 14 of us Air Force officers on it. We had the run of the bridge, and they took us down to watch. We could see the engines and stuff like that. We had a, had a beautiful trip set up on the beside the wheelhouse and listened to the skipper giving orders.
Mm-hmm.
only ate at the captain's table all the time.
This was the summer of
September of 41.
September of 41.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
And the only real sort of hardship was there's nothing but salt water to wash in.
All right.
Jeez. So eventually we got to Liverpool, and we were sent from there to Bournemouth.
Were there any incidents on the trip over, Ken? Any
no,
submarines or anything?
No.
No.
I was lucky that way. I never really saw very much of the war.
What about your time in Britain, Ken? Can you tell us about how that went?
Well, there was more training, and training on Spitfires in what they called an operational training unit, and then I was sent to a squadron.
What was that, Ken?
416 squadron, and then the next spring another guy and I went to 403 squadron, where I stayed for quite a while.
Well, tell us a little bit about the what you were doing when you were on Spitfires, Ken.
Well, these fighter sweeps where we would get a couple of squadrons together and go across the coast of France hoping the Germans would come up and we could shoot at them, and very often they shot at us too.
Mm-hmm.
And we did convoy patrols up and down the east coast of in the North Sea. There were small convoys going from Scarborough, Newcastle to London, I guess we were going. And we had a kind of a funny one there one day. You know, we were pretty young and didn't give a darn. It was boring.
Mm-hmm.
This convoy was in three lines, and without saying a word, they sent two of us at a time out to just fly around. These guys see that no Germans were coming. So we decided to go down and do a roll off the top. We're down low enough, we had to look up to see the guys on the deck of the thing.
See?
But, which was all very well. But the next day, the other guy did it with somebody. He went so low, he hit his propeller in the water and broke the blades.
Hmm. Did he get out? Was he okay?
Oh, yeah, he got the thing back home, but he got a pretty good bollocking for it. I guess he was grounded for a while.
Hmm. You were at Dieppe, Ken. Could you tell us about that?
Well, the maybe the outstanding thing for me about it was the briefing we got the day before. My gosh, it sounds as if we'd be lucky to be alive at the end of it. However, I was a sort of a junior pilot in the squadron at the time, and although our squadron did 4 sorties, I only did 2, the second and the fourth, when they were halfway across the channel on the way home. And there was some action with the squadron on its first sortie, but none after that.
So you didn't see any...
I didn't see a darn thing. I didn't see the town for smoke and dust. What a mess. We lost a couple of pilots that day.
Did you know them, or...?
Oh, yes. I was rooming with one guy. He was... his father was the Minister of Agriculture in Ottawa at the time.
What was
Gardner.
Oh, Gardner, of course.
Oh, yeah, you would remember Gardner.
Yeah, of course.
He delivered all the votes in the West for old Mackenzie King.
And was he dead?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember his name?
Ed.
Ed, and you knew him?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. So what happened? Was he shot at?
He got, never altogether sure whether he chased somebody, which, don't put that in, that he wasn't supposed to. That was a no-no. All we were to do was keep people away. And I don't know whether Ed got jumped or just what happened, but he and another guy were lost on that first sortie. Well, at Dieppe, we lost Ed Gardner and another kid named Monsieur. Ed Gardner was the Minister of Agriculture's son.
Okay.
I was rooming with him at the time.
Did you have any sense, Ken, at that time, of what a disaster Dieppe turned out to be?
No, not. At that time, and I don't know that we were, I guess they knew in Canada here how many had been lost. I'm not sure that we did. My feeling about Dieppe has always been kind of ambivalent. I know the people in Windsor don't like the idea, but they learned an awful lot at Dieppe that came in handy at D-Day.
Okay.
That's the way I've always looked at Dieppe, that, all right, there are a lot of people lost there, but how many lives were saved later on because of what was learned there? And maybe I'm wrong.
Tell us about life in England off-duty, Ken, if you could.
Well, it wasn't bad at all. Our most of the messes were quite comfortable. And we had billiard tables and bars and things. One of the funny things about bars is I remember the Christmas party at Catrick. And they set up a special bar for it. At 6:30, we couldn't find the barman. Somebody happened to look over the bar, and here he was stretched out on the floor. He got into too much of the sauce himself. Another funny thing happened at Catrick was we did fighter cooperation with the bombers. 6 bomber group was right around there too. And we would go up and do dummy attacks on these bombers so their gunners could practice, you see, with their camera guns and things. So, this one day, and after it was over, the bomber CO asked us to come and have tea with him. So we landed on this grass strip and had our tea in a very civilized sort of way. And I was taxiing out across this grass field to get in position to take off again. All of a sudden, both wheels went down in the rut of one of these darn bomber things, and the thing went up on its nose. And there I was, had to face the ignominy of climbing down over the nose of the damn thing to get on the ground. Straight up in the air.
Ken, you subsequently left for India. Could you describe what that was like?
Well, it was 28 days on a ship. We were the first convoy through the Med after they chased the Germans out of Africa. Through the Suez Canal, landed in Bombay, and spent a bit of time at Pune, and then I went to 615 Squadron in the Imphal Valley, which is right close to Burma.
This was a Canadian squadron?
No, this was a RAF auxiliary squadron. They flew on weekends in peacetime. And of course, they're activated in the war, and after the Battle of Britain, these auxiliary squadrons were sent east, most of them.
So what were you, what was the activity like there, Ken?
Well, it was just being on readiness in case something came over. The odd bit of a patrol. One of the odd things about it was the Imphal Valley is surrounded by mountains, and the Japs were in the mountains. The only way you could get in and out of the place was to fly. A comical thing happened there one day, too. The little Japanese rascals somehow got hold of some RAF uniforms and the password, got in there one night and blew up about three or four old Hurricanes. We laughed about that.
So they were in RAF uniforms or whatever?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
At any rate, it was dark and they fooled the guards.
Gee. Okay, so did you have any interesting experiences in India, Ken, other than what you've just told us?
No, not really. One thing that amused me was flying an old Hurricane from Pune to Madras for a 480-hour sort of overhaul, stopping in Bangalore for lunch. It was a pleasant experience. Bangalore is up high, and the temperature was only about 90 degrees.
As opposed to what down below?
Well, it was apt to be anything above that.
You came to, then, you were in India then, just before you returned to Canada, is that
yes,
right? And how did you get back?
By ship from Bombay.
When was that, Ken?
In January of, January of 45, wasn't it?
You were in Gibraltar for Christmas or New Year's Day, weren't you, in
44? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I must have started out about
October.
November. And we went to Aden, and they didn't want to pay for the ship to go through the canal, so they loaded us in lorries and sent us up to Alexandria, where we got on another ship. Yeah, and we spent, Christmas Eve. They dumped us off halfway to Alexandria at a place called Ismailia or Ismailia, and gave us a pup tent and three blankets. Yeah, cold, always. So that was Christmas Eve, and New Year's Eve, we were anchored in Gibraltar.
Did you get off the ship at all?
No. And then we proceeded from there to Liverpool, I guess we spent a little time in Bournemouth, and then I went to a place in Scotland and boarded the New Amsterdam in Greenock to come home.
How many were aboard, do you know, Ken?
Oh, I have no idea.
It's a big ship, though.
Oh, yeah. This was the old New Amsterdam, not the new one they have now. It was a flat-bottom ship. Kind of rough.
How long did it take?
About, 6 or 7 days. We were 14 days going over.
Right. Was there any convoy or?
No, I don't know. I'm pretty sure there wasn't. Because by this time they'd got the U-boats pretty well cleaned out.
So you were coming home as a flight lieutenant?
Yes, which was acting rank given during the war. After a first year a pilot officer, after a year you were a flying officer, and after another year a flight lieutenant, unless you got a promotion in the field. I was not a flight commander except for the last 3 or 4 months I was in India. Yeah.
Okay.
A flight commander is in charge of half of a squadron of 6 airplanes and has to, in India, make sure we had 2 airplanes on instant readiness, and that means being ready to take off in 2 minutes from the time of a warning, and just keep things straight, see that the maintenance is done and things like that. The pilots are behaving themselves. So.
Ken, what about your experience with the Fleet Air Arm?
Well, it was kind of comical in a way. They took a notion that if they put a hook on a Spitfire, they could use it on an aircraft carrier. And this, I think it was 807 Squadron, was to get them. Somebody took a notion that it would be a good idea to send a guy who had flown Spitfires with this squadron for a little while to tell them about a Spit. And for some reason, I was sent, and I went down to Leon Solent, and was there for a week, and no Seafire had come yet. Seafires is what they were calling these things, with the hook on them instead of Spitfires. Well, then they took a notion to send us to that guy we talked to about the had the child. He was there. Oh shoot! At any rate, up almost to the Bristol Channel in an aerodrome there for the next week, and they got a couple and are flying. But the most ridiculous part of it to me was that a lot of these pilots in this squadron had been on the run to Murmansk, a deadly thing. And I wondered what I was doing, supposed to be doing, trying to tell any of these guys if anything about flying. However, it was an enjoyable experience. They're awfully nice fellows. And during that time, one day we went to, another fellow and I went to an aerodrome called Tang Mer, where all the Spitz squadrons were gathered for Dieppe, and it was canceled.
This was what? When was this?
This was in July of 1942, I think, because the Dieppe thing happened soon after that, the real one.
Right.
But they'd had to cancel the first one, and all these things were down in the south and camouflage, and special camouflage.
Yeah. When did you take your discharge, Ken?
In April of 45. We'd been married on the 9th of March in 45, and I was given the choice of either going to Hagersville or taking a discharge, so I took the discharge. That was a kind of a funny thing. I was discharged in Toronto, and I came out in the Queen Elizabeth, hitchhiked up 25 Highway, and I'll be darned if Charlie Sayers wasn't standing there waiting for a ride, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you hitchhiked to Milton from Toronto.
Yes.
Oh, for heaven's sake. And then you didn't go back to college, can I take
no.
it?
No.
Okay.
I looked, investigated it a bit and decided not to. So I bought a farm, and the bridge that takes Steeles Avenue over 401 is in what was once the middle of one of our fields, and Consumers Distributing's there too on that farm.
And you used some gratuity.
Yes, I bought the farm with the help of the Veterans Land Act, which gave us a grant of $6,000, or I forget how much it was, but anyway, it helped out.
What did
you find it? Yeah, well, the farm was right behind my father's, and we could use the same equipment to work it.
Ken, thank you very much for myself and on behalf of the Milton Historical Society. It was just great.